I'm drunk with power, hello. Once I realized I could create one sub-show of Breaking Change by introducing Hot Fix, our interview program, I realized I could do as many as I like. And in fact, because Breaking Change has established that it is a semantically versioned podcast, if I'm going to have a patch release, sorry, you know, recently we did 42.0.1, well, what's a minor release? Well, typically with semantic versioning, that's for new features that don't break anything. And because I don't have a pun today, and because nothing really interesting happened in my life, this is not a breaking change. This is a feature release. So welcome to feature release. It demanded a new jingle. I don't expect to do a lot of these. You know, some other people, some other lesser podcasts, hosts that aren't as creative or awash in free time as I am, they might call this an emergency podcast, but no, you got a new little logo, a new silly name, and it, of course, it's got to fit into the overwrought motif of me versioning this fucking podcast instead of just having some episode number go up. What brings us here together today is there was an iPhone event, the iPhone 17 series. Apple event, the big keynote, this is the big one, guys. This is for all the marbles, and by marbles I mean hundreds of billions of dollars. This is Apple's, you know, big thing of the year. And of course there are several events throughout the year, and they do their own feature release like little one-off videos here and there to announce certain products, but the iPhone one just dwarfs everything else. And of course, the iPhone has two accessory products, you know, that they're really kind of satellite devices because they don't do anything on their own. So you have the AirPods, and we opened with that. And then we have the Apple Watch, right? And so Apple Watch requires an iPhone to set up, and AirPods are kind of useless unless you're the kind of sicko that either uses them with non-Apple devices or you have other Apple devices and not an iPhone. So it makes sense, I think, for Apple to bundle those together into one conference. This was a snappy video stream that they just rolled out. A little less than 90 minutes long. More like 75, hour 15. It was brisk. And I think it's... there's a few reasons for that. If you go back and watch the video, because this is going to be barely, hopefully not longer than it in terms of analysis and review and where things land and what you should buy. This is the buyer's guide for what I think that you should purchase without knowing who you are or anything about you. First of all, it opened instead of with a big, silly, hey, we're going to, you know, do some sort of stunt or some over... you know, dramatic, big, you know, cinema-like film about people with iPhones running into each other or anything like that. I think they've clearly established that WWDC is where they do the silly opening skit, and that the iPhone is really about polish and emphasizing, you know, the points about their platforms they want to emphasize. So the intro video was cool, but what I liked about it was it just showed shit that their devices already can do. And it did a lot of showing off features, like you bump two iPhones together and the contacts switch. And as you watch it, if you've been following along for the last 20 years, like several of us have, you realize that these platforms are just so... there's been so much creep in terms of what is the operating system responsibility and what is the actual... like application layer that you depend on third parties to do, or that you expect users just to figure out on their own, or that are just functionally not possible. And so now these platforms themselves have become so fat, so thick, chock full of stuff you can do that it's really neat to see all that, I think, just blow after blow after blow, including things like continuity, like, you know, drag something from one device to another and then boom, you're just still off to the races. It was impressive for that reason. Another thing about it that was interesting was because it was using all of the OS 26, you know, graphics and user interfaces on all of the screens, there were certain cuts where you were just seeing screen. It was just, you know, screen capture. There was no device bezel around it. And I think that they were trying to highlight, and I think they did a really good job of showing how like the liquid glass segmented view controller is just like a physical hardware button. In fact, like it's basically the same thing. One's just the software manifestation of the Apple control, and one is the physical manifestation of it. That's pretty impressive to have that kind of, they really pride themselves on wanting to have a unified parentheses looking right parentheses design. Now, whether or not it's, you know, the software buttons operate as well, or are as readable and accessible as the hardware buttons, that's a separate point. But in terms of the look of the thing, it was really, really elegant, in my opinion. Additionally, towards the end, they loop in the retail stores and how of a piece they look with all of the hardware and software, and of Apple, you know, I want to call it Apple One because that's what they're calling all their subscriptions, the Apple Park, the headquarters. What I think, I just wanted to pause and acknowledge, normally I wouldn't talk about like the intros of the Apple keynote stuff, but it's worth taking a beat and saying like, this is the end of at least a 10-year journey of, it started with, as far as we could experience it, it started with the introduction of Swift, the Swift programming language. When they talked about that, they were like, this is the future language. It's going to allow us to unify all these platforms. Because if you're not a programmer, you're not technical, you might not realize, but like when the iPhone got created, it was a Skunkworks project. They literally took parts of Mac OS app code bases, forked them, and then that fork just remained completely separate from the Mac one for 4 years, and then the iPad releases. And then, you know, that's maybe a fork of a fork. Some of those had kind of unified code bases, like people manually merging stuff in and then having like a branch that was the iPad release, depending on the app. And it was only really, you know, 3-4 years ago, they introduced basic things to get the iOS and iPad code paths onto macOS at all through Catalyst and then with Swift UI. And now we're at the point where like you can start a new project and basically be on all their platforms with one thing. And now with the new iOS 26, you know, liquid glass unified design, they really have gotten there. So whether it's good or not, whether you like it or not, whether it works well or not, whether customers, when they buy these phones, freak out because everything's different or not, we don't know. But in terms of internally, what have they been shooting for all this time? They got there. So that was impressive. Open up with the AirPods. AirPods Pro Generation 2 has been out for 3 years now. It was announced in September 3 years ago. I've got my notes here. This is a, you know, breaking news report where I'm going to be, you're going to hear paper rustling. Rustle some paper today. So I am getting blown up in text messages because there's a lot of people in my life for whom I am the guy that they text on iPhone day and zero other days. So I'm going into do not disturb mode because I want to give you my undivided attention as I take a sip of soda. All right. So anyway, the AirPods. It's been 3 years since the last, like, flagship, I suppose, the best, highest quality AirPod that Apple produces has been meaningfully updated from a hardware perspective. I think I've been through at least two, maybe three of them. You know, first one had an audio defect and got a free replacement. Second one, I think, maybe got damaged and I got another replacement. The Searles household is very excited for several things about new AirPods. They didn't talk about one of the things, but they did talk about the other two. One, increased sound quality. No one's going to complain about that. So having a wider stage means that it's going to sound like you're literally listening in a, you know, wherever, like, whatever it sounds like to be in a theater, sitting in the audience, listening to people play real music. Whatever that comparison point is between that and just wearing some headphones of the music, the wider stage means it's going to be that much more like actually sitting there. But really, you know, devil's in the details. Everyone's ears are different. They said bass response was going to be a lot better, which is really probably the biggest shortcoming of the AirPods 2 Pro 2. So we'll see. They had pretty animations of that. ANC, or active noise cancellation, being twice as good as the current generation model, which is pretty impressive. It's already not industry leading, but for earbuds probably is, or damn near it. And one of the ways that they did that was by introducing into their tips, which were previously just latex or silicone, they introduced foam. So the outer layer, the part that touches your skin, looks like it's still latex, but inside is foam. And, you know, a lot of people wear foam third-party AirPods nubbins already. But one imagines that, like, all of the different microphones and sensors that go into making ANC work in the AirPods Pro 2 have been improved. The most impressive video, maybe, of the whole keynote, live translation. So when live translation was discussed at WWDC, it was kind of, was it even discussed? Maybe it was only just rumored that it, like I think maybe this is one of those rumors pre-dub that didn't manifest, but it was basically going to be like, you need your phone there, and then it's just kind of like using your phone, your AirPods for just one side of the conversation. And as described in the leak, that didn't sound very impressive. But when you watch this demo video that is totally exactly like real life and will totally play out exactly as well as it did for the two actors who are, you know, exploring a soundstage that was dressed up to look like a market in some Spanish-speaking country, or the two people who are at lunch, both wearing AirPods opposite each other at a table, having a discussion where they're both translating the other's speech into their home language, and also, you know, looking like absolute doofuses in the process, because I don't know, man. Apple makes these AirPods stand out. They're big and white. They look like fucking headphones. Having a conversation with them in, you still look like a goddamn goofeth. You look like you don't know that you have AirPods in. I don't care if you've got transparency on. I try not to do it because out of respect for other people, just to signal to them that I'm listening, I'll take at least one out. But anyway, you want to have it live translate at you like a little Babel fish. You're going to need your iPhone at the ready, but it seems like it's using the microphone from the AirPods themselves. And then live basically streaming it to the phone and back to get a on-device as an on-device AI model on the phone locally back to the AirPod to provide an audio translation. Additionally, it quiets the voice of the other speaker, so you don't have to listen to that fucking human. Ew. You just listen to effectively Siri voice translating for you. We'll see what languages are supported. I don't know if they threw up a little display of what languages are available out of the box. I suspect Japanese is not going to be on day one. Probably stick with the, you know, whatever languages they offered in your high school in the U.S. So probably French, German, Spanish, the quote unquote easy ones that you already didn't have to know because people in all those countries have to speak English. But anyway, we'll see how it goes. If you don't want to learn a language, this looks great. Of course, if you're learning a language, hopefully there's more API layer stuff so that you can, you know, do something with the information and those conversations for educational purposes later. We'll see. But anyway, really cool demo. Good job, whoever did that demo, that video. They, for the 15th time in 15 years, they bragged about how they're scanning people's ears to make, you know, when the first earbuds were announced, or earpods. Yeah, so before AirPods, there were earpods. And I remember the big video about how we scanned everyone's ears. Well, apparently they keep doing a shitty job at scanning ears because they did it again. And this time they got it for real. And these ones are going to fit you better. We'll see. They've got the heart rate sensor. So some people were wondering how this was going to work. It looks like it's a real deal heart rate sensor in there. And there's 15 different workout types that you can do without an Apple Watch, which is impressive. It means that you don't need to buy a $300, $400 accessory to be able to work out and have any amount of telemetry of your fitness. Whether it gets looped into any of the emergency features and stuff, who knows? But if you're not wearing your Apple Watch, it also means you're probably going to, but you are listening to something on your AirPods. It probably also means that you're going to be contributing not as often and not as high fidelity, heartbeat notifications back to the watch. So the health app will have more heart data. Just can't hurt. I'm scrubbing through the notes. Page one's almost done here. Additionally, goes from 6 hours of charge when with ANC enabled to 8 hours just listening to the buds, and that's not and then you put them in the case and you get more time, as well as 10 hours of standby time, which they, you know, we'll see how that. I find that their estimates of batteries tend to be pretty accurate, but least accurate for AirPods, and it might just be because I've got AirPods in my ears 24/7, and I wear those suckers down quickly. Can't imagine that they have, you know, they're that big. It's probably a lot of cycles. They kick off the Apple Watch part like they always do by bragging about all the lives that they saved. But I think they outdid themselves in terms of the level of cinematography for all of the dramatics. And there's, you know, interesting stories, and it's sappy, but it wasn't emotionally manipulative to quite the extent that a couple of previous ones was. It was just impressive. I will say that because Japan is I think Apple's third largest market after China, and I don't actually know where China stands anymore. Anti-immigrant, anti-foreigner sentiment politically in Japan is so high right now that the fact that one of the stories was me and my friend were hiking in a mountain in Japan, and then it started snowing and we almost died and, you know, had to call rescue services and they helicoptered us out of there. I suspect a lot of Japanese Apple fans watching this video are thinking those fucking gaijin just cost this country how much money, and I bet you they paid $2 and then they flew home. Just a guess. If anyone wants to go on Japan Twitter and search for me, I'd appreciate it, because I don't have that kind of time. When it came time to show off the Apple Watch, of course, Jeff Williams, the COO, and who had been kind of the head of the Apple Watch project for many years, he's announced his retirement, so he was not on the video. Instead, it was an opportunity to elevate a few other people. I remembered the men's names, but I didn't write down the woman's. Sorry. Sorry, everybody. That was a swing and a miss on my part. Stan was the first guy. So he announces the Series 11. And this is where you, like, the Series 11 is not a real upgrade in a lot of ways. He announces it's their thinnest case ever. And that doesn't mean it's thinner than last year's. It's just the thinnest. You got to, like, listen really closely when they say that something's the most or the best. It's like, ah, but they didn't say moster or a bester. It's got a, yes. The basic premise of all glass related stuff when they talk about the Ion X glass cover on the basic Apple Watch is that it's, what do we call it now, Ceramic Shield 2. So they've upgraded Ceramic Shield to be twice as scratch resistant, or three times in certain cases, but on the watch it's twice as scratch resistant. So if you're like me and you don't really care about the shatter resistance of the watch nearly as much, or at least you've never needed to, but you do find that your watch gets scratched to all hell and back, that's pretty cool. It's got a 5G modem in it. No one's going to complain about 5G, although no one's going to really appreciate it either, because it's fucking nothing burger. However, they say that it's a much more efficient radio, and so maybe that means the operating system will turn it on more often than never, but we will have to see. A couple new watch faces. One looks like liquid glass, but the numbers are so big and there's no complications, so you're never going to use it, as well as Exactograph, which sounds cool and looks okay. It looks, you know, if you were to take like the 10 circular utility rich watch faces and put them in a lineup and make me name any one of them correctly with a gun to my head, I would get shot. Next up, oh, and this is another tricky one. So whenever they pan to Dr. Lady, who's in charge of the health stuff, whose name I also have forgotten because I'm apparently a misogynist pig. Sorry about that, everyone. It's a hard to pronounce one for what it's worth. Yeah, she announced blood pressure, hypertension, basically like, they're using existing sensor technology, they now have AI to be able to deep learn their way into telling you whether you're hypertense or not. I'm hypertense right now because I had too much coffee this morning. But because I don't think it's that it's... So when I say it's tricky, right? Like, I'm wearing a Series 10 right now. I am skeptical. If they're saying the same, sensor technology, this is probably going to just come as part of watchOS 26, is my guess. It would be weird for them, but not unprecedented, to gate that around the Series 11. Additionally, the sleep score. So in addition to having, sleep tracking, sort of like what they did with the Vitals app, where they're trying to pull together a lot of these stats in a way that can be consumed and viewed on the watch, except for blood oxygen because of the patent dispute. They're pulling in sleep score as another kind of thing on the watch that you can look at from that sleep app thing that they've got. And it's clearly competing with, at least the Oura Ring is the one I'm familiar with, but probably Whoop and other brands that like try to grade you and tell you, hey, you're a B+ sleeper. Good job, bad job. Because certain people are motivated by that. Whereas I just, I didn't really like school. I don't like more things in my life that are grading me. But yeah, if you want to shoot for 100% sleep score, you can do that now. And it'll tell you how to increase your score. I don't know how anyone else isn't sick of all these quantified self things. Like if you get into it for a couple of years, it's neat and it's novel. But after a certain point, you're just getting the same fucking data every day. It's like, yep, I'm still a total piece of shit. Just filling my body full of garbage and treating myself like a dumpster. Next up. They increased the batteries in the Series 11. So new battery chemistry. They claim 24-hour battery life, which we will believe it when we see it, so to speak. But if that means, right now I think they claim 18 or 20, and I get... Mine's dead by 9 p.m. most days, and I take it off the charger at around 7. So if I could just get to 16, that'd be a fucking miracle. And the Nike bands still have the annoying ugly speckles in them. They can't do solid colors of the loop with holes anymore because of their Sisyphean goal of trying to save the environment. So they have to use a tougher kind of rubber. So it's got these speckles in it. And they're also tougher. So that's no good. But what are you going to do, planet? They also announced the SE3. No one listening to this probably wants an SE3, but you got a kid. The Watch SE, the cheapest one, $299, it sucks less now. So it's got what they call the most powerful chip, the S10. She said the S10, our most powerful chip, or the, whatever. Well, the S10 was last year's system in a chip. There have been 10 iterations. S10 was last year's. They're saying that's in the SE3. I don't think they ever said S11. So this might actually be the first Apple Watch where the Series 11 is running the S10's, the previous generation system and a chip or package in it. System and package, SIP, system and package. So we'll see what that means. Apple just loves creating number mismatches inside of its product line, so it wouldn't surprise me. SE3, it basically just inherits a lot of the same features of like the gestures and being able to play audio out of the speakers, which I'm sure is going to be really popular with kids at recess who only have an Apple Watch. And so they try to listen to fucking podcasts and shit. That way they can listen to Joe Rogan while they're like, in class, and the teachers can just have to, I guess, try to figure out whose Apple Watch is it emanating from, and then you'll have to go walk up and down the lanes and be like, hey, you can get red pilled on your own time, child. The Ultra had an update, the Ultra 3. It was introduced by Eugene, the other name I remembered to write down. The Apple Watch Ultra, this is a super boring, shitty update. Like they didn't update it last year. Everyone was like, I wonder why. Maybe they got something cool planned. No, it's just like they're selling fine and they just wanted to save some money. So this year it just gets basically last year and this year's CPU updates. So it's basically they just spec bumped the chip. That means it gets the display that can show down to one hertz, one refresh of the screen per second, which was a feature of the Series 10 last year, and supported by like a grand total of 2 fucking watch faces at launch, so no one really noticed. And still the timers app doesn't refresh every second, which is mind-boggling to me. It's supposed to, but when I'm running a timer, it will very often be like 17, and then I'll look up, and then like as soon as it wakes up again, it's like, oh, you have 3 seconds left. I don't know if that happens to anyone else here. You can write in with your own hot takes at podcast@searles.co, and I might read them on the next edition of Breaking Change, the real one. This is just a bonus episode, I guess. They made a Hermes. They made a Hermes Apple Watch Ultra, which is real fucking dumb. Like, what are you going to do? Like, run a ultra marathon with your like luxury French leather strap or some shit. It just seems like a branding mismatch. If the ultra is all about like the best performance and stuff, that you'd have a luxury edition, but you know, fools and their money. Prices are unchanged. You can pre-order all the watches today. I already pre-ordered my watch. I put in for, you can also pre-order the, AirPods. So I should have mentioned that. If you're listening to this, pull over the vehicle and go ahead and pre-order your shit. Let's see. So I got AirPods are $249 like they've been, just replacing the second generation in the lineup. Engraving and all that is possible. One interesting thing is if you've got Apple Care 1 set up, which rolled out this summer, you can see Apple Care 1 is now the prominent option for selecting Apple Care. And now that we know, it's like, oh, it's only $4 or $5 to add another thing. It's very easy to be like, sure, I'll throw it into my Apple Care 1. Why not? So I did that for all of my purchases. But if you do that during checkout, add some friction to the checkout process because you hit it and there's like, whoa, you got to accept terms and conditions, which requires you to scroll down further than the bottom of the like total line, which is a really bad UX. And somebody's going to get their skull cracked when the rest of the organization is all putting in their orders today. And whoever runs the poor little, JSF page that runs the checkout screen on the Apple Store, they're going to get some feedback because I had to scroll three times to figure out, it's like, oh, when it says I have to read the terms and conditions, there's a little circle that you got to know to identify as a checkbox and not a big bullet point. That was pretty fucking stupid. Anyway, already ordered the Apple Watch. I got the Series 11 in jet black because, it's the least offensive looking color. And the black with speckles Nike loop because it's, those breathe the best. And then for the AirPods, I got AirPods and I put my email address on them, which is a pro tip. If you're going to get them engraved, put a handle or contact info so that the person who can find them doesn't want them anymore and just returns them to you. Or at least you got better odds of that. iPhone 17 time. Yay. All right. How are you doing on time? Have I been talking to 27 minutes? So I'm definitely behind Apple's pace, which I'm going to slow down, take a beat here. This podcast was brought to you by unemployment. So I have time in the middle of the day to watch a fucking show for 2 hours. And then time in the morning to come up with a new jingle, right? And a logo. And then time in the afternoon to record a video and, publish it. It's pretty fucking great. Unemployment. Try it today. iPhone 17. They do a little sizzle video at the beginning. Again, from the could you tell the difference with a gun to your head metric between it and the 16? You cannot. So there you go. However, thanks to thinner bezels, it's now a 6.3-inch display instead of probably 6.2 is my guess. Which is, thinner bezels are nice. It was noticeable on last year's Pro, so it's good that came down. Honestly, the 17's kind of dynamite. Like, I think that the existence of the E line really, really brings up the floor in terms of what they can put into the 17. Because if somebody is looking for the budget phone, now they've got an option. It's $599. And that means that there's a $200 clearance between the E line, the 16E, and one presumes that next spring we're going to see a 17E with the new A19 processor. The 17 baseline is higher than the 16 baseline was, and you'll see in a second. So first of all, it gets ProMotion display, which means that the display runs up to 120 hertz. It goes down to 10 hertz or the LTPO driver in there, which I don't know if the iPhone is down, if the iPhone Pro is down to 1 hertz or not, but 10 hertz is what they've always needed for the always on display. So this is also the first non-Pro iPhone to have the always on display. So that's neat. I know a lot of nerds turn that off and other people are kind of confused by it and you need an extra tap to wake it up. But I actually quite like the always on display because I hate battery life. 3X scratch resistance. So this is also Ceramic Shield 2 technology, presumably part of their partnership with Corning. When Apple improves this stuff usually gets resold and worked into other platforms. So when Apple pays to invest in this kind of like scratch resistant glass. Other industries, even not just other Android handset makers, tend to benefit. So less scratchy glass, everybody. That's great. They also have the 7-layer anti-reflective coating on the base level 17. And if you've got, I've got one of the new M4 or MacBook Pros with the anti-reflective coating, and it looks more matte in terms of like less reflective than a traditional matte display would have on a, like a CRT monitor or on a laptop. Did CRTs ever have them on a laptop? You know, the old style matte non-glass screens. So the anti-reflective, that's great. Made an ass of myself there, forgetting about how computers worked for a while. Lost my 90s cred. Yeah. Anyway, the MacBook Pro anti-reflective screen is phenomenal. I've heard good things about last year's like iPad anti-reflective coating in terms of it doesn't fuck up touch at all. A little bit less bright or whatever. But since 100% of phones are going to be coming with anti-reflective screens this year, one presumes that they're going to be calibrating those displays very carefully so that you're not losing a lot of vibrance or color, because that would obviously be a scandal. A19 processor. If you're keeping track of how fast these processors are, the graphs obviously don't help you very much, but it's 20% faster than last year's A18, which is in the iPhone 16, which both will now run iOS 26. If you want more numbers, see me after class. The 1X camera is 48 megapixels, ultra-wide. 1X camera is still 48 megapixels, and that's the 1X and 2X zooms. It seems basically unchanged. They add in the ultra-wide camera, because remember, the 17 has two cameras in the back. That goes from 12 megapixels to 48 megapixels. Again, another hand-me-down from the Pro line, but much improved, because I think I would suspect that the demographic that uses the iPhone 17 as their carrier device, they probably take more ultra-wide shots. Because I think us like 40-year-old white men mostly just use the ultra wide to take pictures of the corner of our hotel rooms to be like, look how big this hotel room is, right, guys? I got upgraded. Yeah. Let's see. Things to. Yeah, so they keep rolling. Let's see. Ah, yes. So this next piece is maybe from a hardware perspective. They have a lot of stuff today. From a hardware perspective, this might be the most impactful to average people's lives of anything that they announced, and that is the new, what they call center stage. And whenever anyone says at Apple says center stage about a new camera, I immediately groan, because so far most of them have been shit, where they, you know, maybe increase the megapixels a little bit, but then they super crop it and they move it all around and it sucks. This is not that. So this is a almost twice, but not quite, the size of sensor. So it was leaked as if it would be a 24 megapixels, where right now the current front-facing camera is 12 megapixels. It was leaked that it would just be a doubling, but what they really did is something that I've been pushing forever, is I don't know how we're this many iPhones in and Apple is still using 4x3 image sensors or even having the video recording of these things tacked at a hardware level at 16x9 in one direction. It makes way more sense to me that like we would have square sensors and then the crop would just be done in software. So everything should just be a square sensor, and whether you're recording like vertically or horizontally, it should be the same fucking thing. And then you can fix it in post if you get it wrong. Like that way we don't have this, you know, I recorded this video for social, or I recorded this video for, if you got a wide enough frame, you can just record video and then you can compose it for a widescreen YouTube format or for a social app. There, I've been given that free idea out for years, and they're finally doing it for the front-facing camera. So basically, because it's a square sensor, if you just take a selfie of yourself, it'll compose you as best that it can. If a friend, and the video that they put alongside this was pretty good, friend pops up next to you and maybe like it'll zoom out a little bit, another couple friends flanky on either side, and then it'll switch it to a, again, in software, a crop that's a 16x9, more like, you know, a widescreen view, and that way everyone's in frame and centered nicely. And so it actually looks baller. It looks really, really good. Anything else about that? No. Oh yes, one more thing about that. Think about FaceTime. So if you've ever taken, well, two things, I guess. One, FaceTime, it's going to look like I had a FaceTime call with a colleague, a former colleague recently, and I had to hold my phone sideways because he was using his phone sideways, right? Or maybe he was on a MacBook or something. And so I was holding my phone sideways for like a half an hour long call, and it was kind of annoying because I didn't want to look weird, right? Or be letterboxed on his display. This way, there's no difference. That can all be handled in software. And so hopefully, one presumes, especially with FaceTime in particular, because that's Apple's own video chatting app, you just hold it up whatever's most comfortable for you, and you'll look correct to the other person. So that's pretty great. Additionally, when you are taking a selfie, there's a software button to rotate. So if you want to have it be a skinny photo, you can just rotate it in software, and that way you're still holding it comfortably. You still got a good grip on the device. You don't have to do that weird sort of monkey claw thing where you're holding it with your middle finger and your thumb, and then trying to hit the shutter with an index finger. So that's pretty great. Another huge upgrade for iPhone 17 is that now the baseline storage is 256 gigabytes. It's a lot of gigabytes, folks, but they don't last long. So I think the 16E started at 128 because 64 is pretty tight, if I remember correctly. So putting the floor at 256, like, this is a really easy to recommend phone now. If you don't give a real big fuck about cameras, having the absolute best camera, this sounds like a very, very nice phone. It's going to be a lot lighter too than the Pros. Spoiler alert. So yeah, I think the ePhone being in the lineup is actually really, really good for the bulk of people who are in the habit of spending on order of $700 to $800 on a phone. Now, the next thing that they announced, I'm going to take another sip of refreshing Coca-Cola. They did not sponsor that sip, unfortunately. Next up, they announced the iPhone Air. If you're listening to this, you've probably heard that there's an iPhone Air. I'm sure that there was some yodeler on top of a mountaintop shouting it to the world. I turned off Amber Alerts on my phone, so I didn't get that one. But the iPhone Air was announced next, after the iPhone, but before the Pro. On the Upgrade podcast, they were speculating this would be a one more thing or announced after the Pro. And I was like, no fucking way, dude. Like, this is the middle of the lineup. It belongs in the middle of the show. Know your place is what Tim Cook is going to say. The last thing he wants to do is convince a whole bunch of Pro phone buyers to go and buy the iPhone Air. Although, when you hear what the iPhone Air can do, I think a lot of Pro buyers like me are going to be very excited to buy the iPhone Air. So it's got a titanium frame. So it's the only phone this year that's got titanium in it. Reason it's got titanium is thin as fuck. It's 5.5 millimeters, supposedly. I don't think that they gave the number. But titanium is stronger than aluminum. So even though it's heavier than aluminum, one assumes that like they really, really don't want this fucker to bend. They polished the frame so that it picks up all of our scratches over the next year, which is very kind of them. I don't miss the polished frames, but okay. They claim it's the most durable phone yet. The display goes up to 3,000 nits, which is a lot of fucking nits. So I appreciate that. Of course, it all comes down to what the heat dissipation on this thing looks like. If it's like the last couple models, as soon as this thing hits the outdoors in Florida, much less direct sunlight, I'm not getting 3,000 nits. I'm barely getting 600 nits. I'm in that emergency mode where you need a flashlight to read what's on your fucking screen. Additionally, the back is also... Later on in the show, they said, I think it's Jaws was saying it's no longer a glass display. It's a glass back. It's ceramic shield. So they're saying somehow ceramic shield is not glass. So they've got ceramic shield 2 layers on both the front and the back of this device. And that's, pretty nice. You don't want the scratches, but it's also going to be heavier. So if anyone's like looking at the iPhone Air 3 is like a huge weight savings. I didn't look at the tech specs yet. I'm sure they're up on the website. Based on just the titanium and the amount of glass alone, I don't think that the delta in weight is going to be nearly what I would wish for it to be. It's clearly more about the thinness. There's a new plateau up at the top, which if you've seen the Google Pixel phones, that'll be a familiar design language. Apple's breaking that their plateau is better. They're using the word plateau, which I think is hilarious. And up in the middle of the plateau, there was some speculation that maybe the plateau is necessary because the better, wiser, smarter front-facing camera might have more thickness in it, and so that FaceTime assembly might need to be a little bit thicker than the size of the phone. That's possible, but of course, then the iPhone 17 doesn't have the big plateau. So One assumes that while this has the same front-facing camera, or does it? God, I hope it does. I don't have that in my notes. I might be wrong about that. Then this is why you take notes. Yeah. Anyway, speculation was wrong. What's in the Plateau is basically the whole fucking computer. So they put the system on a chip inside the Plateau, as well as, I think they said some sort of speaker technology. I didn't follow. So really the phone is just that strip, and then the rest is just a big battery and then the port at the bottom, which is pretty impressive. And it means basically that the battery and the size of that port are really going to be the limiting factors on how thin they can take this line in the future. So what I think is strategically interesting about this is, of course, this is 1,000 times more exciting than the iPhone Plus ever was, which is kind of an afterthought in the lineup. Apple at some point is going to drop the USB-C and go completely portless. If they were to do that on either the iPhone 17, that would really, really frustrate the hell out of, like, who charges their phones most by cables? It's probably the demographic that is going to be buying the E line and the base line. So, like, if you take the port away, they're going to freak out. The pros, they want Thunderbolt. They want your really fast USB data transfer. They want the maximum amount of connectivity, of course, and so taking something away from them is going to piss them off. But for like the sickos like me who want the lightest, thinnest thing possible, please take away the port. If I can shave 0.1 millimeters off, I'll never think about it again, because I can't remember the last time I charged with anything other than MagSafe, to be completely honest. I did plug in my phone once to try to take a backup, but then it failed, so there you go. Let's see. What else? Talked about bend strength. So that's the first. John Turner's used the word bend strength. So there you go. A19 Pro. This was another question mark. It was a late breaking rumor. It's like, is this going to have the A19 or the A19 Pro? Basically, like, you know, which one it has determines where does it lean in the lineup. And from a pricing perspective and from a CPU performance perspective, it apparently leans in the high end. So that means we'll have two phones this year, probably, once the 17E is announced, that are on the A19. This one is the first one with the A19 Pro. So we had a guy in a dark, rooftop describing what the A19 Pro is. Use your imagination, right? It's two performance cores. They added another efficiency core, I think. So four efficiency cores. They're even more efficiency than ever. And then the GPU side, I don't know, second generation something, caching something, something. And they also said that in bursts, the AI stuff, the NLP neural processing, can be as much as 4x faster, which is, that'll be interesting to see how that manifests. The surprising thing, and this is something that I've been dreaming of since literally, I think my original iBook, or maybe the very first MacBook in 2007, 2006, I've been dreaming about, I wish Apple would make their own Wi-Fi and Bluetooth chips, because I fucking hate Bluetooth. And Bluetooth got less bad over the years, but now they have their own Bluetooth chip. So the N1 was announced as shipping with the iPhone Air. I believe it's the only device that talked about today that has it. I didn't follow really closely. But yeah, it combines Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and Thread. Previously, and in all other models, those are provided by Broadcom, which, if I recall, they've already got some like investor guidance, right? That like app, they're losing a key client over the next certain number of years. So that sucks for Broadcom, but it's good for Apple, because of course, when they own that chip, they can control not just its performance and tune it to their particular needs, but also it all comes down to battery efficiency, which is probably why this is the first device with it. They did a funny rug pull where they announced that they've got their own custom cellular modem that they released this year, and it's on the 16E, which led you up to like, I had already written, okay, C1 is going to go in the iPhone Air, and then they said no. We've already got an update. It's the C1X, because I don't know why you can't just go to C2. I guess you're never allowed to do a numeric increment inside the same calendar year, apparently. But it's twice as fast. So that seems like they should have called it the C2. It's faster than the 16 Pro cellular modem, the current, you know, best in class, and for 30%. Less power consumption. So all that sounds pretty fucking good, and Qualcomm be shaken. We'll see how they respond with some, you know, self-aggrandizing press release or interview in the next couple days. They typically follow Apple stuff with that. 48 megapixels. The camera basically sounds like maybe a slightly spiffed up version of the main camera in the base iPhone 17. But no one can be sure because these bullets all blend together. I think they said really good low light performance, and I saw that the f-stop on the aperture was 1.6. So we'll just have to see. At this point, if you're buying this thing, it's because you're deciding cameras are less important to me than thinness. And I have decided that for me. I might decide it for you in the recommendations coming up. It also supports dual shooting. This must be something that is so iPhone 17 didn't have this. So one presumes only the Air and the Pro can do this dual shooting where you're recording video and it's using that, I hope, new front-facing camera to record you taking the film, as well as whatever's in front of you. And then this way you can, compose later after the fact and take those two feeds and make interesting videos where your reaction is seen in real time. Whereas like right now, when I'm filming something, if I want to get a reaction shot, I have to go and like film it again. And it's just hard to capture the same reaction, you know, perfectly. But that's why I'm a professional. eSIM only, that makes sense. They're, you know, just like they're going to get rid of the ports on this thing first. They don't need to ever make a SIM version of this. Talking about batteries immediately goes to, I think it was Turnus, talk about adaptive power mode. This is a feature that uses AI on device to basically be a low power mode that doesn't just indiscriminately turn off all the shit on your phone. It looks at the sort of stuff that you're using and turns off things based on time of day and location to reduce your power consumption. This is an opt-in feature. You don't have to turn it on by default. One wonders, though, with the hardware profile, if you're carrying an Air, whether it's going to suggest to you that you turn on adaptive power mode or even come out of the box with it turned on. He claims all-day battery life and then gives no numbers. So the definition of a day, unfortunately, in Apple's world, historically does not mean 24 hours. We'll see what that means. Maybe they work really short work days in Cupertino. Maybe traffic's bad. But then something cool happened. They announced first time in the USB-C era, a MagSafe battery. So the MagSafe battery attaches to the back of the phone. It's form-fitted to the iPhone 17 Air, which is appropriate because it's the one that needs it the most. And then with the combination of the on-device battery and the MagSafe, apparently we get 40 hours overall charge, which is plenty for like when you're traveling. So I will be purchasing one of these because I am a sucker and I just spoiled that I'm going to get the Air. It's got cases, who cares? And then it's got bumpers, right? Fuck yeah, bumpers. I bought a bumper to one of my iPhones like 2 years ago and realized this is the last company making bumpers for Apple phones. Bumpers fucking rock. I love bumpers. I will not be using a bumper on this phone though, because if the point is to be as thin as light as possible, that's what Apple Care wants for. Just throw it around, enjoy your life, and then have them replace it when it breaks. If you do get one of those cases or bumpers, there's a crossbody strap for you. And when I see the crossbody strap, it looks, I don't know, it's like a purse strap or whatever. And it's got like magnets to kind of position itself and its length. It's for somebody. I don't know if there's a, you know, a lot of women wear clutches or purses and they keep their phone there. Cause like, you know, women's pants don't come with pockets. Maybe there's a trend going on right now of people having cases with lanyards attached and it's sort of like walking around like invisible purse. I don't know. I don't get to see that part of the internet. So maybe this is Apple responding to something that they see demand there, or maybe this is the next iPod sock. Do you remember iPod socks? The reason you don't is probably the same reason we're going to fondly remember the iPhone strap-on, which I think they called it the iPhone strap-on, but I don't have the website up with me right now. Next up, we had the iPhone 17 Pro. It was first they show us machining the new body. It's the first aluminum unibody iPhone, first unibody that they've done. Which is impressive, right? So it's, instead of having these multiple elements, and certain generations of phones have at the front and the back, and then the little side rail. This is a unibody aluminum device, so lighter weight, more durable. The voice, as things were getting machined, sounded a lot like a lady version of Johnny Ive. Like if Johnny Ive was the Siri voice and you had an alternate, like, you know, gender to pick, more feminine, like it sounded like that. She, they did a great job. The headline color wise is, because it's presumably anodized, because it's aluminum, they can do real colors again. So they are. They've got an orange that is so close to being a cool orange. It's like a little too dull. If they went with the exact same orange that's in the Ultra side button, that safety orange, the Golden Gate Bridge orange or whatever, like that would have looked great. But this is still way more orange than I expected. So that's pretty neat. The design, yes. They say that this unibody design was in part to make the battery as big as fucking possible. And then they had that big honker just like land there and make a clunk. And when you look at that battery, it's like, it's a rectangle with sides and thickness and it, like a metal outer layer. Just to take a moment, right? Prior to these right to repair, like laws and movements that are forcing Apple to make these devices more repairable, these batteries were pouches. They were contorted. They're all glued in place in four different ways. It's actually kind of cool to see a company that's like dragged kicking and screaming into a different way of doing things, like they've been with repairability. And hell, even the eco stuff, that like there was who are the tree huggers that were giving them a hard Greenpeace or something. They used to give Apple a bunch of shit about what they put in their devices, and then Apple turned around and just decided to own it. And so that's when the checklists started of like, and we're arsenic free and whatever. And that was a long time ago now, but it almost feels like with this right to repair stuff, like Apple's just like, all right, well, we lost this one, but then they respect the constraint and they actually take it to the design. So when you look at the design of the phone as it's being shown in this video, it's actually kind of cool that like good designers will respect the constraints that they're operating under. And that's, they clearly understood the assignment, because they can't change the world. They lost that one. They got to do their best. And so you get a big fucking battery and an aluminum unibody. Speaking of color, by the way, it comes in orange, blue, and a silvery one. And the blue one is more blue than like the midnight blue, which is kind of black with a tint of blue. So if you are, there's a lot of dudes out there who for every single year have been buying black iPhones. I always get the black one. I think John Gruber is one of these people. I suspect that their first takeaway is going to be pissed off that there's not a black iPhone Pro. I'm sure that there's a black iPhone 17, but like, no, I'm a pro. I need. So I can't wait to see somebody get mad about that, because I don't give a fuck. Colors on the Air, by the way, are really boring. There you go. There's a blackish one of those. And there's also a new color watch, a Series 11 that's got a space gray. So they've reintroduced space gray alongside jet black in that lineup. But yeah, so this is blue, silvery color, and orange. Whereas, you know, the Air, I think, is a black, a white, a sky blue, and a goldish one. So on the back, right, there's going to be a hole in the back so the MagSafe can work and so the antennas have somewhere to go with all those radio waves out there. And so the hole in the back is filled, not, and this is where he says, not with glass, but with ceramic shield. So there's a ceramic shield over that piece. And there was a lot of speculation that how much were they going to make this appear to be two-tone in the design. And honestly, like, I think that they own it. Like, it's clearly a different material when you look at it, and it will feel like a different material when you put your hand on the back of the device. But they didn't go full-blown two-tone. Like, they tried to, I think, match these colors probably within reason. Not so close as to be eerie, but not different for the sake of being different. They showed off their vapor chamber cooling technology. Very neat. Next page. Also the anti-reflective coating, of course, and the 3X ceramic shielding, yada, yada. This was really funny. So for all those other countries that are slow to pick up eSIMs, in the US, you can only buy the eSIM model. If you do get an eSIM-only iPhone Pro 18, iPhone 18, iPhones, blah, blah, Too many numbers. Let me do that again. I will not edit that out. Just take a moment. If you get an eSIM only iPhone 17 Pro, you get a bonus. You get 2 extra hours of battery because they decided to finally just fill the gap. And you know, it's a big company. I think they make enough iPhones to have 2 different, you know, SKUs of battery parts. Hell, maybe this was actually improved by that repairability stuff I mentioned earlier. So that's pretty fucking rad. You know, if you live in a country that doesn't have eSIMs, now you or the eSIM model isn't sold there, you might actually have a reason to call your carrier and be like, get on it. All three cameras are finally 48 megapixels. All three are fusion. One of those terms has a definition. So focusing on the 48 megapixels, it means that they now can all do the trick where there is a full frame, full sensor view, and then they can double it by cropping to the center 24 megapixels, or no, center 12 megapixels in the middle. And so then now we have like half X with the ultra wide being 48 megapixels. And then 1X, the main 1X camera can go to 2X at 12 megapixels. And now the new telephoto lens is 4X. And they use that plateau not to put the computer there, but to build a periscope lens so that the 4X lens goes that way. They didn't use periscope. They're talking about their tetraprism or whatever, but they say that it's for the optical reach. So they got the 4X one, and then of course you can pixel double that to, or pixel bin it, I guess, to 8X. So now we have a much more, you know, going from 1X to 2X to 5X was way too much reach all of a sudden. It was just like there were so many cases where 3 or 4X is what's desirable, but all you really have is a super tight digital crop at that point. I think 4X makes way more sense. And then of course, very few things in this life need to be captured at 8X or greater. So it makes perfect sense to me. Additionally, they said that the optical quality of the telephoto sensor is way higher than previous. I don't know if they gave a number to how much bigger the sensor is, but you know, the 3X and previously 5X telephoto lenses were not super duper high quality sensors. So the fact that it's now 48 megapixel, that's exciting. 48 megapixel with a large sensor. The video recording, no 8K video recording. If they mentioned that, I didn't see it, which is a bummer. It must be a bandwidth and a file storage thing. Although they did, for the first time, I think, have a 2 terabyte phone announced. Genlock was announced and a device was shown, but I wasn't paying attention because this is the part of the keynote where I typically tune out. It's just too much keynote talk. We'll see how we're doing. We're 58 minutes in. The tech woven cases, they look less fragile than the fine woven. They look kind of manly. It looks like if you shop at REI, I think you're going to like the look of the iPhone Pro this year. And that's my last note. So just under an hour. There we go. I'm going to order an iPhone 17 Air. You should too, unless you really, really want better cameras. The Series 11 looks good. If you have a Series 10, don't get it unless you're a sicko or got more money than sense. What else is going on? The AirPods Pro 3 are a no-brainer. Go buy that. Buy multiple. Buy one for everyone you know. It'll make their life better. The other, I was saying right at the top, like there's 3 things I want better for the AirPods. One is audio quality. One is noise canceling. The other one is microphone quality. God, I hope the microphones are better on that thing. Listening to people on phone calls or, God forbid, on podcast recording with an AirPod Pro just fucking sucks. So we will see. But anyway, just to keep this at under an hour, I'm going to go now. Go buy some shit.